hasten that demise of the Zionist entity.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chris Williamson, host of Palestine Declassified, joining us live from Derby in the UK, and also Laith Maarouf, activist and political commentator from Beirut. Thanks for joining us on this edition of The Spotlight and sharing your thoughts and views with us. That brings us to the end of this edition of Spotlight.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Here, we enlighten you with the Ayah 61 of Surah Yunus, recited by Ahmad Mirzad Waqifi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Wa ma takunu fi sha'ni wa ma tatlu وَمَا تَتْلُو مِنْهُ مِنْ قُرْآنٍ وَلَا تَعْمَلُونَ مِنْ عَمَلٍ إِلَّا كُنَّا عَلَيْكُمْ شُهُودًا وَمَا يَعْزُبُ عَنْ رَبِّكَ مِنْ مِثْقَالِ ذَرَّةٍ فِي الْأَرْضِ وَمَا يَعْزُبُ عَنْ رَبِّكَ مِنْ مِثْقَالِ ذَرَّةٍ فِي الْأَرْضِ وَلَا السماء ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا وَمَا يَعْزُبُ عَنْ رَبِّكَ مِنْ مِثْقَالِ ذَرَّةٍ فِي الْأَرْضِ وَلَا فِي السَّمَاءِ وَلَا أَصْغَرَ مِنْ ذَلِكَ وَلَا ولا أكبر إلا في كتاب مبين صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. And you are not engaged in any affair, nor do you recite concerning it any portion of the Qur'an, nor do you do any work, but we are witnesses over you when you enter into it. And there does not lie concealed from your Lord the weight of an atom in the earth, or in the heaven, nor anything less than that, nor greater, but it is in a clear book.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines. Israel keeps pounding the Gaza Strip for a fourth straight day, striking positions in the south of the territory. Former Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan is set to appear in court following his arrest earlier this week. And Sudan's warring sides reach a deal to protect civilians and no agreement yet on a ceasefire. And welcome your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. The death toll from Israel's strikes on the Gaza Strip grows as the regime keeps bombarding the besieged Palestinian territory for a fourth day in a row. The latest Israeli airstrikes have hit areas in the central and southern Gaza Strip. So far, 31 Palestinians, including civilians, have been killed. The latest victim is a young man who succumbed to injuries he sustained on Thursday. Resistance groups, including Islamic Jihad, have responded by firing missiles and rockets into Israeli settlements. One Israeli has died and nearly 60 others have been injured as a result. That, according to Israeli media reports. Palestinians say the retaliatory attacks will continue until Israel stops its policy of assassinating resistance leaders. Hamas, meanwhile, has said that the silence of the international community emboldens Israel to continue its aggression. Our correspondent in Gaza, Ashraf Shannon, gives us the details on the situation in the Gaza Strip.
The Ministry of Health announced that Israel has been using internationally banned weapons against the civilians in Gaza since Tuesday morning and caused heavy destruction to at least 24 homes in the Gaza Strip, as Israel has been attacking the Islamic Jihad military wing, the Al-Quds Brigades, and especially attacking their families, causing loss of life to the closest family members of those Islamic Jihad commanders who were killed, and causing extensive damage to their homes and to the surrounding areas. The Israeli attacks took place, and less than 24 hours later, the Islamic Jihad and the resistance retaliated by firing nearly 900 rockets towards the Israeli regime. And according to the Israeli officials, almost 70% of those rockets that were fired from Gaza, homemade rockets that were fired from Gaza, has managed to evade the so-called Iron Dome missile interception system.
Wafa al-Udaini, Palestinian activist and journalist, is joining us live from Gaza City. Now, Wafa, we just heard our correspondent giving us some updates about Israel using internationally banned weapons, yet the international community has remained silent. We have seen no reaction regarding these atrocities that are being committed by the Israeli regime, which, of course, has emboldened it even more.
Yeah, actually, you know, like we feel really disappointed from long years from the occupation, since the occupation of Palestine from the international community, because most of their statements, indeed, they just, you know, say that we are sorry about what is happening in Gaza or even in occupied Palestine, but they never take action on the ground for Palestinians to stop the occupation and to stop the atrocities against the people of Palestine. Like, you know, like, actually, this world really is unjust. I mean, like, during my previous interview, I told you that now Israel is bombing Gaza, and they murdered, assassinated Palestinians. And the resistance groups, they didn't fire any missiles toward Israel. And then we didn't hear anything from them, you know, condemning or saying anything. But we heard their voices after actually the Palestinian resistance retaliating and responding to the Israeli crimes and massacres. So we heard them saying, you know, like that Israel has the right to defend themselves, while Palestinians, we feel sorry for them, but they have to stop their terrorism, that they have to stop firing missiles toward Israel. See, and then indeed, like, if you, for example, like in Ukraine, actually they were crying over the people there, and then they aided the Ukrainian resistance with weapons and so on to defend themselves. But for Palestinians, they don't aid the Palestinians, who are the landowners, who are the occupied people and the oppressed people. They aided the Israeli occupation forces with advanced weapons to commit massacres against the people of Gaza here. And you know that most of the war plans that the Israeli occupation is using against the people of Gaza, actually they are made in U.S., you know, like they are American weapons. So they kill us indeed by the European and the American weapons. So how come they want to deny and condemn the Palestinian, what is happening here, in particular in the Gaza Strip? And actually, according to the international law, it's really our right as Palestinians, as oppressed people here, to defend ourselves. And actually, it is like we do believe here that this is Israeli narrative. You know, they say that they attacking or they assassinating Palestinian resistance, you know, who they call them as terrorists, you know, but indeed they actually, it is like a collective punishment. Like they control everything here in Gaza. You know, like they control the sea, the land, the air, everything, even the crossings. You know, they just closed the crossings, and many patients here, they got banned by the occupation to exit Gaza for treatment. Also, they prevent international journalists from coming here, from entering Gaza to cover their crimes. You know, because they believe that they commit something wrong, so they don't want anyone from the international journalists to report about their atrocities here in Gaza. So they prevented also many things to enter Gaza. So they completely, closed the crossings.
Thank you very much, Wafa al-Udaini, Palestinian activist and journalist, joining us live from Gaza City, where the developments are taking place. with the latest. Today marks the first anniversary of the Israeli killing of renowned Palestinian journalist Shireen Abu Akleh. She was fatally shot while covering the regime's violence against Palestinians in the occupied territories. 1 year on, no one has been held accountable for the journalist's brutal murder.
Hundreds of people attended a memorial service for slain Palestinian journalist Shireen Abu Akleh in the occupied West Bank city of Ramallah. Abu Akleh held an American passport and worked for the Al Jazeera TV network. She was killed by an Israeli sniper on May 11, 2022, while she was covering an Israeli raid in the West Bank city of Jenin. Footage captured moments after she was shot shows her motionless body with another Palestinian reporter being seen next to her. Both are wearing easily recognizable press vests and blue helmets. Since her killing, Abu Akleh has been hugely remembered by Palestinians for her dynamism and courage to cover Israeli crimes. The road where her office was located is now named Shireen Abu Akleh Street.
Every morning we pass by her office to say good morning, Shireen. All our colleagues, including myself, who accompanied her when she was martyred, still think that she is on vacation and will be back to the office.
Shortly after her death, the U.S. government said evidence showed Abu Akleh was killed by an Israeli bullet. But ironically, Washington claimed that it had seen no evidence pointing to her killing being intentional, a line that has also been used by the Israeli regime. Washington also promised an investigation to find out the truth, but a year of U.S. inaction has prompted Palestinians to take the matter into their own hands.
The case has been submitted to the International Criminal Court in The Hague. We're still working to pressure on the Attorney General and the court itself to act and to take a stand in this regard, either by announcing the creation of an official independent international investigation committee or by simply announcing his position.
Abu Akleh was not the first journalist to be killed by the Israeli regime. A report by the Palestinian Journalist Syndicate published in 2023 shows Israel has murdered more than 50 Palestinian journalists in the past 22 years, but the regime has never taken responsibility for any of those killings. Many fear that Israel's impunity only means more Palestinian journalists will be killed in the future.
Israel wants to silence the free speech and the voice of the press, as well as the truth which convey the atrociousness of the Israeli occupation and its crimes.
Even Western politicians who are staunch supporters of Israel are now calling for an independent and thorough probe into the Palestinian journalist's murder. But after so many calls and too many letdowns, many are now questioning whether the situation would have been different if Abu Akleh had not been Arab or Palestinian.
Former Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan is set to appear in court later on Friday following his arrest earlier this week. The Chief Justice has ruled that Khan's arrest was unlawful and the whole process needs to be backtracked. The government has said that it will re-arrest Khan if he is released. That sets the stage for more unrest. Violence already broke out when Khan was taken into custody on Tuesday on corruption charges. At least 10 people have been killed in clashes between police and Khan's supporters. Nearly 2,000 people have been arrested as well. Khan supporters plan to march to the capital, Islamabad, from across the country later on Friday. Police have now imposed an emergency order banning gatherings. Talks between Sudan's warring sides to reach a truce have made some headway. Sudanese army and paramilitary rapid support forces have reached a deal to protect civilians and the movement of humanitarian aid. The army and the RSF signed the preliminary agreement in the Saudi city of Jeddah after days of wrangling. The U.S. State Department official said the agreement, however, falls short of declaring a ceasefire on which the two sides remain far apart. The unnamed official added that negotiators have set a goal of reaching a ceasefire deal in up to 10 days. The declaration signed early on Friday seeks to improve the flow of humanitarian relief and begin restoration of water and electricity services. The UN says more than 600 people have been killed and more than 5,000 injured in the Sudan fighting. In addition, 700,000 people have been displaced inside the country, while 150,000 have fled to neighboring states. A new survey shows 2 out of every 3 young women in Britain have faced sexual harassment, bullying, or verbal abuse in the workplace. The survey was carried out by the UK's umbrella labor organization, the Trade Union Congress. It says most sexual abuse victims do not report these incidents for fear of not being believed or losing their jobs. The study, which covered 1,000 women, says 3 out of every 5 women reported such incidents at work. However, the figure climbed to 2/3 among those who were aged between 25 and 34 years old. It also found that most abuse cases occurred on work premises rather than being isolated incidents. They were often repeated. The results also showed that fewer than 1 in every 3 women who experienced sexual harassment informed their employers. French President Emmanuel Macron's decision to force through a rising of retirement age continues to produce almost daily protests. The nation's youth recently took to the streets as they are facing longer careers, more taxation, and worn-out parents. Ramin Mazahedi reports from Paris.
In France, students and youth groups marched in the ongoing effort to get President Emmanuel Macron to revoke a 2-year hike to the retirement age, which was imposed last month by executive decree. France is well known for its work-life balance, but what's often forgotten is that the average person pays for that balance with nearly 50% of their annual wages taken in taxes. Citizens will now have to work 4 years longer than in just 2009, and many youth are upset that they are paying for a social model which they can't fully enjoy. The age hike has many households wondering if they can hang on, as breadwinners may work physically demanding jobs or suffer from work-related injuries. Many students are upset that 4 months of protests haven't been effectively leveraged by union leadership to stop the age hike proclamation. Macron insists that the country must turn the page, as the age hike is already enshrined into law. He continues to show no sign of agreeing to a revocation, something that did occur in 2006.
Even if Macron can't get France to keep quiet about the age hike, what's certain is that he's going to continue with even more unpopular far-right economic reforms. That's why many expect anti-government protests in France to continue for a very, very long time. Ramin Mazahedi, Paris.
And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
From east to west, throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio.
Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing, who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness. And I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne. and thy prophets and thy messengers whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change. And that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive, and make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
In the limelight.
The Zionist regime has renewed bombing Gaza after killing 13 Palestinians. Two more people are killed in the first strike, taking the day's death toll to 15. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote in this regard, the Zionist regime fighter jets renewed their bombing of the Gaza Strip recently, hours after killing 13 people, including 10 civilians. Local media reported that an air raid targeted a vehicle in Qarara town in Khan Yunis, near the eastern fence separating Gaza and the occupied territories, resulting in two additional fatalities, bringing the day's total death toll to 15. The Zionist regime military said that the strike targeted an anti-tank guided missile cell. The attack followed several raids by the Israeli regime military in Gaza, which began shortly after 2 a.m. local time and killed at least 4 children, 5 women, and 3 Palestinian Islamic Jihad commanders. Another 22 people were wounded in the morning raid, including 3 children and 7 women, some of whom are in a serious and critical condition. In response, the Joint Operations Room, JOR, an umbrella body of armed factions in Gaza, including Hamas and PIJ, issued a statement warning that the Zionist regime will pay the price for the raids.
Meanwhile, hundreds of Israelis living in cities near the Gaza border have evacuated to the other parts of the territory, anticipating reprisal attacks. Bomb shelters have been opened and roads and beaches have been closed. Netanyahu said that he had ordered the targeting of the Islamic Jihad leaders following the recent rocket fire and that Israel prepared for any possibility. Palestinian armed groups had fired rockets towards the occupied territories following the death of Palestinian prisoner Hadar Adnan in an Israeli regime prison following nearly 3 months of hunger strike. A brief exchange of fire ensued, leaving one Palestinian killed and two Israelis wounded. The Islamic Jihad is considered the second largest armed group in the Gaza Strip, behind Islamic Resistance Movement of Hamas, which governs the enclave. The group said in a statement that a response to the Zionist regime aggression will not take long. The recent airstrikes were the largest attack mounted by the fabricated regime of Israel against Gaza since August last year, when the military assassinated senior PIJ commander Taysir al-Jabari, triggering a three-day exchange of fire. At least 49 Palestinians were killed in 2022 Israeli regime bombardment, including 17 children, and 360 others were wounded. Meanwhile, Middle East Eye reported Ahmad Asaf and Rani Qatanat were killed in a raid on Qabtia town near the city of Jenin. The Zionist regime forces killed two Palestinians in a dawn raid on the town of Qabtia in the occupied West Bank recently. The Palestinian Health Ministry identified the two men as Ahmad Jamal Tawfiq Asaf, a 19-year-old from Qabtia, and Rani Walid Qatanat, a 24-year-old resident of Jenin refugee camp. The Zionist regime forces sprayed a vehicle with bullets, killing Assad and Qatanat and wounding three others, according to local reports. The Zionist regime military said in a statement that assailants opened fire at IDF troops from a vehicle, and the troops responded with live fire. Eyewitnesses said a large army force raided the town near the northern city of Jenin under a heavy presence of drones and closed down the town's main streets. The Zionist regime forces ordered cars not to move through loudspeakers and stormed a number of Palestinian homes and surrounded others. Heavy gunfire and explosions were heard around the town as fighting then broke out between the Zionist regime forces and armed residents, eyewitnesses said. The incident brings the total number of Palestinians killed by Zionist regime forces so far this year to 108. A total of 19 Israelis have been killed over the same period. The recent raid comes a day after a series of Zionist regime strikes in the Gaza Strip killed three Islamic Jihad commanders and 12 civilians, including four children, leaving the two sides braced for a flare-up. Meanwhile, Wafa News Agency reported Israeli regime bulldozers recently demolished two Palestinian-owned apartments in the town of Jabal al-Mukabber in the occupied city of Al-Quds under the pretext that they were built without a permit. According to sources, the two apartments were 220 square meters each, owned by brothers Faraz and Ali Shogerat and inhabited by 10 people, mostly children. Faraz said that he had received a demolition notice from the Zionist regime authorities last February, and that all the attempts to prevent the demolition of his apartment and his brother Ali's apartment were unsuccessful, pointing out that the occupation municipality court issued a decision about 2 months ago to freeze the demolition decision until next September. But he and his brother were informed by the lawyer last week that the municipality had submitted a request to the court to cancel the freezing decision, and the court approved the demolition.
Choose to think better. Welcome to A Better You. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Midstream.
Not put the fate of our countries and peoples in the hands of the foreigner, but we bet on the victory of truth in the end, and we won the bet. This is how Syrian President Bashar al-Assad addressed Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi during the latter's visit to Damascus last week. The Syrian president's words summarized the origin and depth of the bilateral strategic relationship that linked the two allied countries since the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran in 1979. At that time, Arab regimes were moving to a position that contradicts and confronts the aspirations of Syria and the Arab Liberation Forces, leaving Damascus alone and facing the projects of the American and Israeli colonialists and their tools that began to multiply in the region. Also at that time, Iran was moving from the position of the exclusive agent of the colonizer and the guardian of his interests in the region to the position of Palestine, to where Syria stood. Therefore, it was necessary for the hands to extend between the two historical capitals to intertwine together to bet on what was right. Syria has borne a lot of blame and clear Arab official pressure because of the position late President Hafez al-Assad took when he opened his arms to Imam Khomeini's Islamic Revolution in 1979 and stood by Iran during the 8-year Iraqi war against the Islamic Republic. The Arab regimes allied to the colonialists never forgot that position. Not because of jealousy over Iraq, of course, but because the Syrian-Iranian alliance that developed over the subsequent years to form a practical axis of resistance in the region included all Arab and Islamic movements against the colonialists and the forces of hegemony up to the defeat of the Israeli enemy in southern Lebanon in the year 2000 at the hands of the most prominent Arab resistance force that arose from the womb of this axis. Because this alliance was and still is posing a great danger to the forces of dependence and surrender associated with the projects of Western powers in West Asia. Therefore, when the Western war on Syria began in 2011, Tehran did not delay a single moment in joining Damascus in its war, in which it was intended to destroy the last Arab country that said no to colonialists and raised the matter of resistance and liberation in its face. Iran quickly entered the field through military advisors, trainers, and volunteer popular groups that were sponsored, trained, and armed by the Iranian state to fight side by side with the Syrian Arab Army and unite with them in a baptism of blood that moved this alliance to a new level of brotherhood on the long and grueling road of resistance. For all this, President Raisi's visit comes in its official form, duration, and the way it was received in the Syrian capital from the airport to the People's Palace as an explicit declaration of the victory of this alliance, which is led by Tehran and Damascus over one of the most dangerous projects that targeted the two countries and the region for decades. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. The Iranian presidential plane landed in Damascus last week carrying President Ibrahim Raisi accompanied by a large government delegation in the first visit of an Iranian president to Syria in 13 years. The timing of the visit seems to be the most important of all without diminishing the importance of the agreement signed between the two countries and the transition of cooperation between them to economically advanced stages after its security and political contract was completed during the years of the war. To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Mr. Laith Maarouf, political commentator. Thanks a million for being with us, Laith, to discuss this very important visit to Damascus. I mean, at the height of the moment of Arab openness towards the Syrian capital, Damascus, the visit of the Iranian president, Sayyid Ibrahim Raisi, to Damascus carried several messages in many different directions about the relationship between Syria and Iran, about Iran's position, basically, on the Syrian political map and the directions of cooperations ahead between both states in both the near and the far future. I am interested in learning what messages this visit sent, especially to the regional players.
Well, it clearly came out before the expected re-entry of Syria into the Arab League and before any peace treaty is signed between Turkey and Syria. So what does this mean? This means that the most important relationship that Syria has with any regional country is Iran, and this visit was a message to all the Arab countries that are trying to court Syria back into the Arab League and to create relations again. Remember, Syria has been in alliance with the Iran since the Islamic Revolution in 1979. Syria has been offered billions of dollars and trade and taking off the sanctions if it gives up the resistance in Lebanon and its relationship with Iran over the last two decades since the war in Iraq that happened multiple times as offers from the United States. And today, as Syria emerges victorious from the global war on it, led by the United States and its local vessels, we see Syria reaffirming its relationship with Iran, that it will not move closer to Arab states or give up its relationship with Iran after all this war.
Well, I was interested in listening to what Syrian President Dr. Bashar Assad had to say when he received his Iranian counterpart. He basically said that when the war was launched against Syria 12 years ago, Iran did not hesitate to stand by Syria. And then he added that the two leaderships had bet on the victory of truth. And in the end, they both won that bet. But at what cost, though?
Well, obviously, the cost of resisting imperialism and occupation is very high. But the cost of surrendering to a colonizer, to an imperialist power like the United States, is even higher. We can see clearly what happened to Libya, what happened to Iraq, and what happened to any other country that gave up in the face of invasion. So Syria did pay a huge price for protecting its sovereignty and its dignity, but it definitely that price was cheaper than being currently occupied by Wahhabi contras or Israel or the United States directly. So this was the only choice in front of a Syria that wanted to stay sovereign.
Was it the only choice for Iran as well?
Of course it was the only choice for Iran. Remember, the United States, after its invasion of Iraq, had a plan to destroy 7 countries in a row, and the last country in that list was Iran. And, of course, the war of 2006 on Lebanon was to defeat Hezbollah. It was supposed to be followed by the war on Syria, as we saw, and for a crushing of Syria, for eventually Iran to be left alone in the region, and where Israel and the United States would attack it with its regional vessels. Of course, luckily, thanks to the perseverance and resistance of both Lebanese people and the Syrian people, that plan didn't come to fruition, and Iran today is safe because Syria was victorious, because Hezbollah was victorious.
Well, the Iranian visit came as a clear and direct response to the Israeli enemy as well, just like you just referred, which for years has been working towards the goal of expelling Iran from Syria in various direct and indirect ways. The most prominent of those methods that Israel played is the battle between wars policy, which aims in an essential part to create some sort of a discord between the Syrian and Iranian leadership. How do you see that Zionist war ending?
Well, the battle between wars, this Israeli strategy, is now completely failed. And, of course, we saw in the last few weeks Syrian resistance firing missiles and throwing drones on the Golan Heights, occupied Golan Heights. We saw also resistance from Lebanon firing missiles on occupied North Palestine. And those were both indicators that the battle between wars strategy of Israel has failed and is coming to an end. Right now, the Israelis know that if they continue in this strategy of battle between wars, it will lead to a complete regional war. That's why, since that day, the Israelis are concentrating more on attacking Palestinians in the West Bank that are not as armed as the rest of the axis of resistance and are isolated because of the borders with Jordan. So this is what we can see as a holistic picture of the region. The more the axis of resistance gets integrated in its coordination, and the more, as we see, countries leave the American sphere, the more isolated Israel is, and the closer the end of the Zionist colony comes to be.
Well, definitely, and it is very interesting to see how things will develop for Syria, given that just a couple of days back, the Arab League also reinstated Syria into its stronghold, if you will. But for me, I see them coming back to Syria, not the other way around, because Syria has always remained where Syria is, with the resistance, with the Palestinian cause, and with the regional freedom and liberation of our peoples in West Asia. I want to thank you very much, Mr. Laith Ma'arouf, political commentator, for joining us to talk about this new phase of resistance in West Asia. Next, we will be talking about the unfortunate martyrdom of Sheikh Khadr Adnan in Israeli captivity.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marwa Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
Martyr Khadr Adnan concluded his journey of pain, closing the record of his life full of struggle with an epic testimony in which he died of hunger, just as Imam Hussein died in the desert of Karbala thirsty. This world is a summer cloud, and when were the clouds a decision? This is what Martyr Khadr once shouted at his enemies at the top of his lungs, reassuring this time that his West Bank has recovered, opening the way for the free people after him to complete the path he paved for them. More details in this following report.
As soon as the occupation authorities announced last week that the leading captive of the Islamic Jihad movement, Khadr Adnan, had become a martyr after 86 days of hunger strike, the events in the Palestinian territories escalated between the firing of rockets from the Gaza Strip and shootings in the occupied West Bank. This was followed by widespread popular and factional condemnation, as well as a vow by the movement of captives in Zionist detention centers to launch a major hunger strike in rejection of the policy of administrative detention. In parallel, the Islamic Jihad and Hamas movements reached intensive contacts from mediators, during which they demanded that these two movements not respond to the assassination crime from the Gaza Strip and avoid a new military confrontation with the occupation during the current period. However, the resistance responded that the crime of assassinating Adnan will not pass without an appropriate response to it, with the aim of deterring the enemy and preventing it from repeating its crimes against the Palestinian captives. Indeed, Hamas and the Islamic Jihad held consultations about the nature of this response, which included parties in the axis of resistance, and as a result of the consultations, it was concluded that the initial response would be from the West Bank, which has so far witnessed two operations that resulted in the injury of three occupation soldiers, to be followed by responses from various arenas, including Gaza. It was not long before the Gaza Strip witnessed a series of tensions, which began with the firing of three missiles from the Strip towards the illegal settlements. These field developments were preceded by a series of positions condemning the assassination of Sheikh Khadr Adnan and threatening the enemy to pay the price, as the head of the political bureau of Hamas, Ismail Haniyeh, made a call to the Secretary General of the Islamic Jihad movement, Ziad al-Nakhale, in which he confirmed that the battle with the enemy is open. The Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, in turn, mourned the martyr, saying that this crime calls for a serious and responsible national stand to deter the occupation and stop its crimes against the captive movement. Likewise, the Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine called for participation in activities of anger in the Palestinian West Bank, including Al-Quds and the Gaza Strip, stressing that the Palestinian people will not forget their prisoners and their sacrifices. The assassination of Martyr Khadr Adnan will obviously not go unnoticed, because the Palestinian people will turn this crime into a nightmare that haunts Israel every day. Perhaps the best solution in the process of avenging the martyr is Martyr Adnan's own theory of unifying the internal Palestinian arenas, just like the regional axis of resistance. Meaning to not only count on the military response to avenge the martyr's assassination, but also destabilizing the enemy's security in all possible areas.
To discuss this issue with us from Toronto is Susanna Khalil. She's a politologist and researcher, columnist and activist, and founder of the Kanaan Association. Thank you very much, Ms. Susanna, for being with us. It's an honor to have you on the show. What the occupation forces did was a heinous assassination in front of the eyes of the entire world, and Israel has violated, as usual, all international conventions when it comes to the necessity of treating prisoners well and respecting their rights. I mean, they tortured the prisoner during his hunger strike, and they kept him in his cell despite his need for treatment, which they denied him, and they denied it during the time of his hunger strike. Did that surprise you in any way?
Thanks for having me. No, I'm not surprised. Quite the contrary. It is a colonial regime, and therefore that is proper of colonial bestiality against the native population. That is proof that the colonial regime of Israel is not a state, and even this colonialism is not a nation. It is a Eurocentric colonialism. It is a classic colonial anachronism. Now, concerning the administrative detention, euphemistic term, where the detainee without charge, and the lawyers, for example, they have no access to any information, this is a violation. Even this is a violation of the international law, the civil international code. So we have to understand that we are not dealing with the state. We have to understand that we are dealing with a colonial regime that operates according its raison d'être. That is to say, it's a condition as a colonial regime. In fact, they have openly say that the administration detention exists as a British mandate. So let's remember that the present colonialism in Palestine, called the so-called Israel, was thanks to the British colonialism, Europe. Therefore, I'm not at all surprised by this method of bestiality and brutality, which go beyond fascism, since we are today in 21st century and in front of a colonial anachronism.
This past week, after the announcing of the martyrdom of Sheikh Khadr Adnan, we witnessed an escalation in the field inside of Palestine on different various arenas. We had, after the martyrdom of Sheikh Khadr Adnan, after he had went on a hunger strike for 87 days, we saw an escalation in the form of operations against illegal colonial settlers in the occupied territories. We saw confrontations in the West Bank. Multiple martyrs, Palestinian martyrs, fell there as well, but also soldiers were wounded, occupation soldiers were wounded in that confrontation. And we saw missiles being launched from Gaza in retaliation to the assassination of Sheikh Khadr Adnan. How do you think the Zionist entity handled this form of escalation after some sort of a relative calm since the end of Ramadan until now?
Yes, I would like to speak about the Palestinian native, the freedom fighter Khadr Adnan Muhammad Musa. He was arrested 11 times, and he was in jail for 8 years, of course, in different periods. And he called for hunger strike 5 times. And the last time, his health was deteriorating, and the colonial regime of Israel denied any medical assistance. Khadr Adnan is an inspiration that revived all the different branches of a struggle for the liberation of the native Palestinian people from this colonial yoke of Israel. So the escalation, and that we saw, for example, the last week, there were riots in all the Palestine, in several cities, not only in Gaza and West Bank. It was also in Jerusalem, in Haifa, and Yaffa, and Nazareth. And in the occasion of the Ramadan, and even in the occasion of Eastern week, Holy Week, the Palestinian native, both Christian and Muslim, were attacked by their respective religious ritual by the colonial fascism. This is the native people who are revolting against this colonialism, which is what they have to do. And the solution as a native is to until the abolition of this colonial regime.
Mm-hmm. Well, Susanna, there is no doubt that the so-called Minister of National Security, Itamar Ben-Gvir, the Zionist, sought to record some sort of an unprecedented achievement for him to leave a detainee, a captive, in hunger strike, to leave him to die. This is a first. But in a way that would, in his mind, put some sort of an end to hunger strike that is pursued by the illegally captives, the illegally detained captives in Israeli prisons. Do you think that by killing Sheikh Khadr Adnan, Itamar Ben-Gvir now has ultimately put a halt of similar hunger strikes that can be sought out by captives like Sheikh Khadr?
He, as a fascist, white supremacist person, I think he felt had a sadistic logic in his conception, in this racist and colonial conception. I think he feel happy about what he did. But let me to talk about him, because he doesn't hide his fascist sentiment, his fascist feeling. So Itamar Ben Gvir says what the other do not say, that they are just as fascist as he is. I would like to put that clear because it seems to me, Ron, when, for example, many people now, they say that the colonial regime of Israel turned to the right wing. Colonialism is itself a right wing, and the fascist per se. So why I'm talking about that? Because I see a lot of analyze that say, for example, the arrival of right wing seems to me, for example, when the people start to analyze the arrival of the right wing, it's incoherent for me. It's demagogy. It's even in intellectual emptiness. It's very artificial, because this is a colonial regime. It itself is a fascist. Mm-hmm. So I would like to make clear, when we see there is a right wing and in Israel, how come and that this is natural. Mm-hmm. Because we are dealing with the colonial fascist supremacist entity with the need to exterminate the native population. Definitely. And this personality, I'm going to finish with that, this personality, at least he doesn't hide his feeling and his fascist idea, which the other do. When I see those analysis, what they say, how come the colonial regime of Israel turned to right wing, I think they are making up this, hiding the real, mm-hmm. the real face of this colonialism.
Definitely. When it comes back to the natives, Ms. Susanna, we see them as an occupation, illegal colonial forces on our lands, whether they call themselves right or left. They are a Zionist occupation, yeah. And they will have to leave Palestine. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart, Susanna Khalil, a politologist and researcher, columnist and activist, founder of the Kanaan Association. And I know that you are fluent in Spanish, and I wish we could do that in Spanish language to give you the comfort of expressing yourself. But you were absolutely amazing, and I'm always so honored to have you on board, Susanna. Thank you very much for being with us to talk about how the Israeli occupation assassinated Sheikh Khadr Adnan while he was in their captivity. I want to thank you, ladies and gents. I'll see you again next week. Assalamu alaikum.
In the limelight.
More Americans died of gun-related injuries in 2021 than in any other year on record, according to the latest available statistics from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC. That included record numbers of both gun murders and gun suicides. Despite the increase in such fatalities, the rate of gun deaths, a statistic that accounts for the U.S. growing population, remained below the levels of earlier decades. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. According to the website of Pew Research Center, in 2021, the most recent year for which complete data is available, 48,830 people died from gun-related injuries in the United States, according to CDC. That figure includes gun murders and gun suicides, along with three less common types of gun-related deaths tracked by the CDC. Those that were accidental, those that involved law enforcement, and those whose circumstances could not be determined. The total excludes deaths in which gunshot injuries played a contributing but not principal role. CDC fatality statistics are based on information contained in official death certificates, which identify a single cause of death. Though they tend to get less public attention than gun-related murders, suicides have long accounted for the majority of the United States gun deaths. In 2021, 54% of all gun-related deaths in the U.S. were suicides, 26,328, while 43% were murders, 20,958, according to the CDC. The remaining gun deaths that year were accidental, about 549, involved law enforcement, 537, or had determined circumstances, 458. About 8 in 10 U.S. murders in 2021, 20,958 out of 26,031, or 81%, involved a firearm. That marked the highest percentage since at least 1968, the earliest year for which the CDC has online records. More than half of all suicides in 2021, 26,328 out of 48,183, or 55%, also involved a gun, the highest percentage since 2001. The record 48,830 total gun deaths in 2021 reflect